The World's Greatest Trial.
This is the world's greatest trial because it involved the Son of God. Now, you would think that the Son of God would have had the world on trial. But in this scenario, the world, which is known for its evil, put in judgment our Lord Jesus Christ. And they judged the Son of God, and their judgment was that he was worthy of death. Now, I really wanted to start off with a what they call a preamble, but when I got done with it, I found it was more of a pre-ramble. I have a lot of facts here that have a bearing on this trial. Now, they don't have to be in any specific order. At least I couldn't find any, and it really doesn't matter. Maybe you'll find a better way of putting this information in its proper place. But the fact is that all of these bits of information are needful that we understand this as regards to this great trial. Now, for whatever reason, the memorial will never fall on Monday, Wednesday, or Saturday. It can fall on 4 days of the week, but it will not fall on those 3 days. Now, one of the bits of information that we may find helpful is Luke 22:9-12. You know, when the disciples asked for instructions on where to keep the Passover, Jesus gave such unusual instructions. They asked, "Where wilt thou that we prepare?" And he said, "Behold, when ye enter into the city, there shall a man meet you, bearing a pitcher of water. Follow him into the house where he entereth in, and ye shall say unto the good man of the house, The master saith unto thee, Where is the guest chamber where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples?" Now, those are unusual instructions. He could have said, "You'll go to a white house in this city, and it's the right house on the first block, and you'll enter in there and ask the owner of that house for the guest chamber." Why did Jesus give such unusual instructions? Well, you must remember that this was touching the last day of our Lord, and as we study this, we will find that Jesus was putting in a command performance. He took almost total control of all the events that were going to happen that day. Nothing must get out of sequence or out of order or out of time. There was a limited time in which all the events must be wrapped over up, and so Jesus was putting in a command performance. And Jesus had to give these instructions because, as in reprint 33:63, Brother Russell says, "It has been surmised that Jesus took this indirect way of indicating the place that Judas might not be informed until the time of the gathering." In other words, if Judas knew the exact place that the supper was to be kept, he could have betrayed Jesus and they could have arrested him early in the evening, and it would have disrupted the program that Jesus had for that night. So Jesus took control of this, and he gave instructions that if you heard it, it wouldn't do you any good because you couldn't interpret it. Judas could have heard these instructions and he still wouldn't know where they're going to have the evening Passover, because they were to meet a man carrying a pitcher and they were to follow him, and in the house, it would make it impossible for Judas to have betrayed our Lord before the proper time. And then in John 13:27, why does Jesus send Judas out in haste? He said, "What thou doest, do quickly." Here again we see that Jesus was taking command of the timing. He sent Judas out at the auspicious moment, the right moment, the right time, so that he knew it would take so long for him to get there and so long for him to get back to make the arrest. So that allowed Jesus just so much time for the events of that evening. As you study this, you'll see that he was really putting in a command performance all the way through. Now, some other incidentals. Annas, he figured in this trial. Now, Annas, it is alleged that he had been the chief priest for about 17 years, and then he appointed six of his sons in succession and deposed them in succession. Following this, he appointed his son-in-law, Caiaphas, the high priest. Now, you've heard of kingmakers. Well, Annas was the priestmaker. And Annas, it is believed, controlled the money changers of the temple. And he probably amassed considerable wealth in the exchange rates that they had there. And he had a lot of power by reason of that wealth. And it was Annas who first and foremost wanted Jesus killed, especially after Jesus overturned the tables of the money changers. But subsequently, after Jesus' death, having put Jesus to death didn't help his cause any, because Annas was later dragged through the streets. He was scourged and murdered, and it is alleged that one of his own sons that he had deposed had betrayed him and pointed the crowd to where he was hiding, so that they were able to put upon him and kill him. Pilate, he chanced to marry one of Caesar's granddaughters named Claudia, and was given the governorship of in Israel. He came from Barcelona, Spain, but his marriage cast him into this greatest trial on earth. He was too weak a man to defend the innocent. He was also known for his cruelty. In almost every instance in previous times when the Pharisees and the religious leaders had gone to him to plead clemency and mercy for anyone, he never granted it. He was known to be very harsh and very mean-spirited, and always invoked the highest penalty. And so This had a bearing. When they brought Jesus to him, they thought that he would perform as he always performed, and they were rather shocked to find that for the first time he wanted to extend clemency. It took them unprepared. Then there was Barabbas. He was the determined fighter, desirous to restore national sovereignty to the nation. He was an insurrectionist, a revolutionary, and he was willing to do what was ever necessary to get national independence, no holds barred. Now, actually, Jesus' disciples wanted to see the nation of Israel become an independent nation, a sovereign nation again. They had similar goals, except that they were following Jesus, who they thought would bring this about in a more grand and way, and by, as it were, God's plan and order. Now, there's some other matters with regard to this trial. There were numerous errors in it. Under the code that was existent at that time, the code of law, Judas would be considered a co-criminal or an accomplice, and not a credible witness. Therefore, his word was insufficient to legally arrest Jesus. He was one of them, and he should not have been used in the arrest process. Second, their code prohibited the arrest of one accused of a capital crime in which his life might be forfeited after the hour of sunset, before the rise of the sun. Arresting one after darkness was considered a denial of that individual's rights. They arrested Jesus at midnight. Annas had no, this is a third item, Annas had no legal right to try or to interrogate Jesus. He was not an officer of the court, and no provision existed for a one-man court anyway. That was illegal. The code required at least 3 and then 2 and finally 73 in capital crimes. He had no charge upon which to arrest Jesus, and only after Jesus was arrested did he seek to find a charge upon which to arrest him. Jesus knew that he did not have to testify against himself, and he reminded them openly of this in the trial. 4. Caiaphas, he was condemned before Caiaphas, but that too was an illegal trial. In capital trials, the judges were to deliberate 2 days and 2 nights on a light diet before a decision was reached. They laid this aspect of their code aside and condemned Jesus with dispatch during this illegal trial. They were not allowed to have a trial during the night. It had to be at sunrise before the whole Sanhedrin could be gathered. But they condemned Jesus during the night. And then they had another trial at sunrise by the whole Sanhedrin. And then again, the fifth item, all voted against Jesus to put him to death. But under Jewish practice of law, unless the accused one had one sympathizer in the trial, it was considered to be unfair. Well, these are some of the facts. Now we get to the trial itself proper. Now, in order to understand this, you must realize that this was not just one trial. It was 6 separate trials. 3 of them were religious, and 3 of them were civil. Now, apparently they had kept the memorial somewhere between 8 and 10 p.m., the Passover and the Memorial Supper, in a period of about 2 hours. And then ending with John, the 14th chapter, Jesus said, "Rise and let us go hence." So chapter 15, 16, and 17 were not in the upper room, but they were walking to Gethsemane. And as they walked, apparently they would slowly walk, and Jesus would stop and talk with them, and he offered that prayer in John 17 somewhere along the way to Gethsemane. Actually, five or six chapters of John are spent on this last night. He fills in the details that no one else could do because he was there and he had a very special talent for the details. All right, now Jesus was arrested. He was at Gethsemane apparently between 11 and 12. These are just rough guesses. And then the crowd apparently came for him, and this is recorded in John 18, 12 to 24. This is the first trial. It's an illegal trial. You can mark this down in your book if you want, in your Bibles. John 18, 12 to 24. This is the first, and it is an illegal trial. Then the band and the captain and the officers of the Jews took Jesus and bound him. And they led him away to Annas first, for he was father-in-law to Caiaphas, which was high priest that same year. Now Caiaphas was he which gave counsel to the Jews that it was expedient that one man should die for the people. And Simon Peter followed Jesus, and so did another apostle, that is John. That disciple was known unto the high priest, and went in with Jesus into the palace of the high priest. But Peter stood at the door without. Then went out that other disciple, which was known unto the high priest, and spake unto her that kept the door, and brought Peter in. Then saith the damsel that kept the door unto Peter, Art not thou also one of this man's disciples? And he said, I am not. And the servants and the officers stood there, who had made a fire of coals, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself. The high priest then asked Jesus of his disciples and of his doctrine. Now notice, Jesus was arrested without a charge. There was no charge placed against him. He was arrested. Now, Annas, who really has no legal basis for judging Jesus, is trying to talk with Jesus to trip him up in something that he might say that he could make a charge against him. Now, Jesus is well aware of this. And, you know, it says that he was like a lamb to the slaughter. Well, in certain parts of this trial, you'll find that he was not. He stood right up. And in this case, he does. In John 18:20, Jesus answered him. Now notice this, he's pointing out that they have no charge against him. He said, I spoke openly to the world. I ever taught in the synagogue and in the temple, whither the Jews always resort, and in secret have I said nothing. Why askest thou me? Ask them which heard me. Now this is what he should have done in the first place. He should have asked those that heard him and then brought charges against him. He doesn't have any charges, and he's asking Jesus, and he's trying to create a charge out of something that Jesus might say. And Jesus is pointing this out to him. He's not a lamb here in this particular instance. He stands right up, and he says, Why askest thou me? Ask them which heard me what I have said unto them. Behold, they know what I said. And when he had thus spoken, one of the officers which stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, Answerest thou the high priest so? Now notice, Jesus doesn't quiet down. He doesn't, as it were, you know, become a lamb. He speaks right up. He says, If I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil. But if well, why smitest thou me? You notice he's standing up on his two feet, directly confronting them, and he is really showing up the hypocrisy of this trial and showing the fact that they did not have a charge against him. Now, Annas had sent him bound unto Caiaphas, the high priest, and I think Annas was a little bit embarrassed because these were the legalists. These were the doctors of the law. And I think he was totally conscious of the fact that he was bumbling on this trial very badly, that it was being badly conducted. So he probably sent a runner ahead to Caiaphas and probably gave him instructions. Find some witnesses that you can... they brought him in without any witnesses. Now he's telling Caiaphas, find some witnesses that you can bring some charges against him with. Because this man apparently knows his rights. So they then go to Caiaphas. This is in Mark 14:53 to 65. And in reading your Bibles, you can't often tell which trial is which. But this is the second trial, the second religious trial in Mark 14:53 to 65. And it's taking place somewhere between 1 or 2 a.m. in the morning, roughly. We don't know the exact time, but just to get a running idea of what's happening this night. So they then bring Jesus before Caiaphas. Now this is an illegal trial, for the Sanhedrin were never to meet before daylight. They were never to meet before daylight. But they had this small meeting here of just a few. And they led Jesus away to the high priest, and with him were assembled the chief priests and the elders and the scribes. And Peter followed him afar off, even into the palace of the high priest, and he sat with the servants and warmed himself at the fire. And the chief priests and all the council sought for witness against Jesus to put him to death, and they found none. And many bear false witness against him, but their witness agreed not together. Now, they were doctors of the law, and they knew that according to the law, they had to have at least two witnesses that agreed for it to be a valid judgment. They could not get two witnesses that would agree on anything. And these were hired witnesses. You'd think that with all the power in Satan's kingdom that he could have had two people prepared to give a united testimony against Jesus. But God had overruled this so that none of their charges, of these false charges, could stick. Not one. Not one in all this trial could they hang on Jesus. He was like Teflon. None of these charges would stick. And there arose certain and bare false witness against him, saying, "We heard him say, I will destroy this temple that is made with hands, and within 3 days I will build another made without hands." But notice, neither so did their witness agree together. They couldn't get their act together no matter how they tried, even though these were lying witnesses. They would have said anything if they had been properly tutored, but they couldn't get their testimony to agree. And so, lo and behold, here is the Sanhedrin with the chiefs and priests and the elders, and they can't get two witnesses to agree to anything to charge Jesus with. So they are in a bind again in this second trial before Caiaphas. And the high priest, this is in Mark 14:60, and the high priest stood up in the midst and asked Jesus, saying, "Answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witnesses witness against thee?" He held his peace. They hadn't any united testimony. He had to answer nothing because they didn't have any two witnesses. And he well knew it. And again the high priest asked him, now he's trying to interrogate him to find a charge upon which to condemn him. And so he asked Jesus this pointed question, Art thou the Christ, the Son of the Blessed? And what do you say if you happen to be the Christ, the Son of the Blessed? That's what he was. He said, "I am. I am." And then he reminds them, he quotes from Daniel, the 7th chapter, and this was like a warning. "Now, I'm standing here in judgment before you, but it won't always be this way. You will see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. So be careful. Be very careful. You're dealing with someone who is going to be in a very powerful position in a future judgment day." But this had no effect upon them. But notice, on this point, which was true, Jesus owns up to it. He says, "I am." Now, this is true. He was the Son of the Blessed. He was the Christ. And the high priest rent his clothes and saith, "What need we any further witnesses? Ye have heard the blasphemy. What think ye?" And they all condemned him to be guilty of death. And some began to spit on him and to cover his face and to buffet him and to say to him, prophesy, and the servants did strike him with their palms of their hands. Now they condemned him at this trial really for the truth that he was the Son of the Blessed, the Messiah. And he had to answer this, and in Matthew's account, 26:63, they said, I adjure thee. In other words, it was almost like an oath that he had to tell the truth here, and he did tell the truth. He told them that he was indeed the Son of God. But notice, this is the illegal trial. Nothing that they said here was valid. They could not put him to death in this trial, because this was at night. So guess what? Then they have to have another trial. And this is the third religious trial recorded in Luke 22:66-71. Luke 22:66-71. This is before the whole Sanhedrin, and it was daybreak. Now, this is legal. This is a legal trial because the sun wasn't up, but the first light. It was daybreak, and it was legal for them to have this trial. And this we read in Luke 22:66-71, and as soon as it was day, the elders of the people and the chief priests and the scribes came together and led him into their council. They asked him the same question, Art thou the Christ? Tell us. And he said unto them, If I tell you, ye will not believe. And if I also ask you, ye will not answer me, nor let me go. I've been already judged illegally. You've already condemned me illegally. But you notice he doesn't say, I am here. He does not in this trial say, I am. Hereafter, then he reminds them of the same thing that he reminded them of in the illegal trial. Hereafter shall the Son of Man sit on the right hand of power of God. Then they said all, Art thou then the Son of God? And he said unto them, Ye say that I am. He says, You've already judged me in this illegal trial, and why are you having the second trial? And they said, What need we any further witness? For we ourselves have heard of his own mouth. Well, they didn't hear it at this trial, at this legal trial. They heard it at the illegal trial. Now, remember, these are the legalists. And these were the people that, they had it all worked out on every detail. They would say, well, if you swear by the temple, that's not too binding. But if you swear by the gold of the temple, well, then you've got to keep your oath. If you swear by the altar, well, that doesn't bind you too much. But if you swear by the gift that's on the altar, well, yeah, it's binding then. And Jesus would tell them, well, let your yea be yea and your nay be nay, and don't swear at all. But if your yes should be yes and your no should be no. So these were the legalists. But notice, they were performing everything here illegally. And then we read in Mark 15:1, and straightway in the morning the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council, and bound Jesus and carried him away and delivered him to Pilate. And now we come, we've had three religious trials, and it resulted in a judgment against Jesus, and they wanted him to die. So they bring him now before Pilate and the Hall of Judgment. And this is in John 18:28-38. John 18:28-38. Then led they Jesus from Caiaphas unto the hall of judgment. And it was early, and they themselves went not into the judgment hall, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Now notice, the judgment hall had a ledge coming out and a porch, and they wouldn't as much put their foot on one of the cobblestones of that because they would have been defiled. You know, talk about Jesus accused these scribes and Pharisees of straining at gnats and swallowing camels. They wouldn't put their shoe leather on that portico because they would have been defiled, but it was all right to kill the Son of God. That was quite all right. So we see, the extremes that the mind can go to. And Pilate then went out unto them and said, "What accusation bring ye against this man?" And they roll their eyes, and guess what? They don't have any charge. They don't know what to say. "Well," they said, "if he wasn't a malefactor, we would not have delivered him unto thee. He's a bad man." Well, I know, but, even bad men have to do something before we arrest them. You have to have a charge against him. Well, they did have a charge, but they didn't want to tell Pilate what it was at this point, because they knew it wouldn't have interested Pilate at all. So Pilate was taken back that these doctors of the law would bring a man in without a charge. Their bloodlust was running high. He could see that. And then said Pilate unto them, "All right." He says, "Take ye him and judge him according to your law." And the Jews therefore said unto him, "It is not lawful for us to put any man to death." Well, that sent a sober warning to Pilate that they wanted this man killed. That the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled which he spake, signifying what death he should die. So it was necessary for Jesus to be condemned in this civil trial by the Romans, because the Romans used crucifixion. The Jews did not. They would have had to stone Jesus to death. So this had to fulfill the scriptures. Everything had to go according to the prophecies. So then Pilate entered into judgment hall again, and he called Jesus and said unto him, "Art thou king of the Jews?" Now, apparently, Pilate was aware of the fact, being governor of that area, that Jesus, some 5 days earlier, had entered the city of Jerusalem as what? As king of the Jews. But he didn't come with an army, he didn't have any swords, he didn't, you know, it was a peaceful rally, and he winked at it. And it didn't mean anything to him, because there was no threat to the power of the Roman authorities in that peaceful presentation of himself to the nation as king. But in fact, he was a king. He presented himself as a king. And so he asked Jesus, "Art thou the king of the Jews?" He's casting around to find out just why they brought him in. He's not sure. They didn't give any charge. And he probably knew of this event. He'd heard of it. His soldiers had informed him of it, and they would probably ask him even then if they should have arrested him. And he said, "No, leave this alone. It's a religious matter. Stay out of it." And so now he's asking him directly. Now notice what Jesus said. And this is in John 18:34. Jesus answered him, "Sayest thou this thing of thyself, or did others tell it thee of me?" In other words, is this a part of their charge, that I am a king, or is this something that you are charging me with? And apparently it didn't come from the Pharisees and the religious leaders. And Jesus answered him, saying, "Sayest thou this thing of thyself, or did others tell it thee of me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Thine own nation and the chief priests have delivered thee unto me. What hast thou done?" Jesus answered, and this was taking charge, really. It was a part of his own death warrant. He admits to being a king. He says, "My kingdom is what? Not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight that I should not be delivered unto," not the Romans, "unto the Jews. But now is my kingdom not from hence." So he's admitting, in a sense, of being a king, but that his kingdom is not here, not ready to be set up. And, of course, this raises probably some eyebrows on the part of Pilate. Pilate therefore said unto him, "Art thou a king then?" Are you a king? You said you've got a kingdom. Are you a king? And Jesus answered, "Thou sayest that I am a king. To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. Every one that is of the truth heareth my voice." Now you would think that this might be enough grounds for Pilate to condemn Jesus, but he apparently is still trying to save Jesus. Six times in this trial, Pilate says, "I find no fault in him." Six times. And yet, even though he says that six times, he caves in and lets them crucify him, of a man that he considers innocent. So then he sends him to Herod. Now this is the second civil trial, or the fifth trial, that takes place during this night. Because when he heard that Jesus was from Galilee, he was glad, because then he sent them, Jesus, to Herod to be tried there. And when this is in Luke 23:6-12. Luke 23:6-12. This is the fifth trial, the second civil trial. When Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked whether the man were a Galilean, and as soon as he knew that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself also was at Jerusalem at that time. And when Herod saw Jesus, guess what? He was exceedingly glad. Now you can imagine the religious leaders here, they could see their case sinking beneath the waves. They're desperate. They want to have this man put to death, and here's Herod. Oh, gee, this is a celebrity. This is great. This is wonderful. I've been wanting to see you for such a long time, like an old friend. And the religious leaders could see their case sinking beneath the waves. And then he questioned with him in many words. But notice now he's like a lamb to the slaughter. He doesn't answer him at all. Doesn't say anything. In the ninth verse, "But he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and the scribes stood vehemently, and they accused him. And Herod with his men of war set him at naught, and mocked him, and arrayed him in a gorgeous robe, and sent him again to Pilate. And that same day Pilate and Herod were made friends together, for they, before they were at enmity between themselves." But all Jesus would have need to have done was to perform some little miracle, any little thing, and the Pharisees knew that he had the power to do this, but he did nothing. He did nothing to further his case, and Herod puts a purple robe upon him and sends him back, as it were, king of the Jews. So then, this is the last part of the civil trial. This is in John 18:39-40. John 18:39 to 40 and John 19:1 to 16. But ye have a custom that I should release unto you one at the Passover. Will ye therefore that I release unto you the King of the Jews? And they cried all again, saying, Not this man, but Barabbas. Then Pilate therefore took Jesus and scourged him. And the soldiers plaited a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they put him on him a purple robe, and said, Hail, King of the Jews! And they smote him with their hands. Pilate therefore went forth again, and saith unto them, Behold, I bring him forth to you, that ye may know what? That I find no fault in him. Then came Jesus forth, wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe, and Pilate saith unto them, Behold the man. And when the chief priests therefore and the officers saw him, they cried out, saying, Crucify him, crucify him. Pilate saith unto them, Take ye him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him. And the Jews answered him, We have a law. Now this is the first time that they reveal to Pilate why they wanted Jesus killed. They said, We have a law, and by our law he ought to die, because he what? He made himself the Son of God. Well, he was the Son of God. He didn't make himself the Son of God. God was his Father. But according to their law, he was the Son of God. Now, they thought they were going to score some points with Pilate. Do they? No. It backfires. We read in the John 19:8, When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he was more afraid. He believed that he was the Son of God. He believed in some way that this man had a kingdom and that he was a powerful figure. And he's trying desperately to save Jesus. He's frantic. He says he was more afraid. And went again unto the judgment hall and saith unto Jesus, Whence art thou? But Jesus gave him no answer. Now we find again that Jesus was like a lamb to the slaughter. He wouldn't do anything to save himself. And Pilate said unto him, Speakest thou not unto me? Knowest thou not that I have power to crucify thee and power to release thee? And Jesus answered, Thou couldst have no power at all against me, except it were given thee from above. And now, in talk about a command performance, he takes Pilate off the hook. This is what he says in John 19:11. Therefore he that delivered me unto thee hath the greater sin. You're not going to bear the greatest burden for my judgment. He's taking Pilate off the hook. Those that delivered me are the ones that are more responsible than you. And I think Pilate is relieved, although he still tries to release Jesus. And thenceforth Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, saying, If thou let this man go, thou art not Caesar's friend. Whosoever maketh himself a king speaketh against Caesar. And when Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Jesus forth and sat down in the judgment seat in a place that is called the pavement, but in the Hebrew Gabbatha. And it was the preparation of the Passover in about the sixth hour, and he said unto the Jews, Behold your king. But they cried, away with him, crucify him. Pilate saith unto them, Shall I crucify your king? And the chief priest answers, We have no king but Caesar. Now notice the two charges against Jesus are what? One was that he was the Christ, the Son of the Blessed, which he admitted to. And the second charge is that he is the King of the Jews. Both were true. Both were true. Jesus died for the truth. None of these false charges were laid against him. There's not one charge against Jesus in the final trial except two charges that are true. And so Pilate had it written in three languages, Hebrew, Greek, and Latin, over the cross what was written, King of the Jews. And the Pharisees went back to him and said, oh, we don't want that on there. He's not really the king. Put on there that he says that I am the King of the Jews. And Pilate got his back up at this point, and he says, I have written what I have written. He's King of the Jews. And of course, it was true. He was indeed the King of the Jews. Now, the sequel of this story is in Acts 17:31. He has appointed a day in which he will judge the world in righteousness by that man whom he has ordained, whereby he has given assurance unto all men in that he raised Jesus from the dead. So we see that when our Lord judges the world, it's not going to be an unrighteous judgment like they judged him with, but he is going to judge them in righteousness. And God has given assurance of such a righteous judgment day in that he raised Jesus from the dead.